Hi there, it's Dr. Linda Papadopoulos with The Psychology Behind. Now this week I speak to the brilliant Josh Patterson. Now you may know Josh from Made in Chelsea, but you may also know him from his wonderful campaigning work on mental health. He famously opened up about his own struggles a couple of years ago and since then has gone on to do some wonderful things. He's got a series on YouTube called Limitless, where he looks at the connection between mind over matter and how to deal with it. And he's currently pushing his own limits, his own physical limits, with some amazing marathons, like back-to-back marathons that he's doing with his good friend Ben Tansley. So without further ado, I give you Josh J.P. Patterson. Hi there.
Hello.
So I'm going to kind of blow your horn a bit because I know it's sort of you're not great at doing it yourself. So you guys have to check out what Josh is doing. He's got a brilliant series on YouTube called Limitless, which we'll go into, which basically looks at the extent to which the notion of mind over matter helps and helps in terms of not only our physicality, but our psychology as well. You must check it out. And then with his friend Ben Tansley, basically riding, you know, in your Beyond Limits quest on a wheelchair. How many marathons is it that you're doing?
So on April 23rd, we're doing, well, the 900 miles equates to essentially 34 marathons, or just over.
34 marathons, and how many days?
Well, to break the world record, we need to do it in 19.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is astounding. So Josh, one of the first things that I saw you was an interview on Good Morning Britain where you spoke about kind of struggling with mental health as a team. Now, this to me is really interesting because it's an area that I work in quite a bit. And I think whether it's social media or schoolwork, there's a lot of pressure on teens. Can you take me back to that time, what was going on for you?
I mean, I always had a plan when I started Reality that was one of my ambitions. And I knew that what's funny about it is I knew my credibility would diminish. It would increase with a certain caliber of person and it would diminish with another. Mm. Because I think the issue with the industry is you always have to have this, this front of perfection and funny and good looking. And, you know, you're either the heartthrob. And I think when you start to show realness, the interest starts to diminish. Because people don't want to see cracks.
Yeah.
So it was a tough decision to make, but it was the right one because it's the people that are engaged with what I do now. Those are the people that I want to focus my attention on. You know, it's interesting to see the demise in certain elements of my career off the back of speaking so openly about it. I mean, when I started to post my content of doing the marathon in the wheelchair of Berlin, I lost something like 15,000 followers.
Are you kidding
me? Yeah, which... Initially, it was upsetting not because of the following, but just to think that 15,000 people are uninterested in something like that. But then what I have to keep saying to people is you can't be upset or frustrated because the reality is the 15,000 that became unengaged have never connected or been affected by something like that. So why would they be interested? So you have to respect that decision. Mm-hmm. The ones that remain to stay and the ones that continue to follow, those are the ones that are.
Sure.
And those are the ones that you really need to focus on.
Absolutely. But there's something for me when I hear that, maybe I'm reading it wrong, about just genuinely this misrepresentation of what it means to be a human.
Yeah.
The idea that perfection exists, I think, is one of the most toxic ideas of our time. You know, the idea that we have to not only edit our own lives, but only consume the edited lives of others, I think, is unbelievably toxic. And also, you know, there's something about, you know, the misnomer of reality. If you're calling, you know, reality perfection, then that by virtue, you're selling something impossible. And it's all well and good if, you know, as an adult, you're able to kind of, you know, understand this and sort of play around with it in your mind. But, you know, I'm guessing a lot of your followers are impressionable young people, sort of in their teens, who, you know, are being sold this message. So, that's astounding to me.
Do you know, if I was to do what the people want me to be, then I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. You know, if I go down the route of topless photos consistently, playing the game of what TV show I was on, not speaking about the matters that I'm passionate about, engagement would probably be far stronger, but because I've kind of gone against the grain,
mm-hmm.
the interest starts to diminish. You know, the difference between me posting something, say MIC related or family related, compared to me being sat in a wheelchair can go from sort of like 70,000 likes to 1,000
wow,
and like four comments. You know, so again, it's interesting for me to understand my audience. But the one thing that I will say about posting what I post now is I have freedom. Mm-hmm. I do not care what the engagement is. I do it because I enjoy it. And actually the recognition will be there. Not for the validation, but I think those that don't even comment, but you know that it's having an impact in their life, that's what's important. Yeah. Because there's someone right now sat in a wheelchair who's given up on life. And I want them to know that I count for something and that I believe in them and that I'm invested in them and that I can understand the adversities that they're facing every day. And I have a real opportunity to stand for something credible. And for me, it's that.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so long you can post a topless photo for on Instagram. Unfortunately, my body is going to diminish. The one thing that I will always have is my mind, and I can continue to grow it, make it stronger, and preach it.
But I think you're spot on there. I think for far too long, and it's interesting because you're a guy saying this, right? So I deal with a lot of young women and body image disorders, perhaps more so than men. One of the things we've always spoken about is, why would you put all your self-esteem eggs in the beauty basket? Like, by all means, you know, some self-esteem eggs in the beauty basket's great, right? You know, I always say I like my highlights, but I like my PhD a hell of a lot more. And you know, and there's a truth to that, because, you know, my education, my knowledge, that won't be taken away from me. But your looks, the, you know, that's probably the first thing that's going to go. Or if you over focus on them, it's often to the detriment of anything else. And I think that, you know, this kind of visual nature of our world these days, I think has a lot to answer for, doesn't it?
I think, unfortunately, a lot of the most powerful people are the wrong people to be in power. I can't single people out or businesses because I'll probably have a lawsuit, but, you know, and that, you know, the one thing I'd say about being in this industry is that I've realized how fake it is. You know, unfortunately, a lot of celebrities out there that capitalize on charity for profile, you know, I've showed up to events that are hugely close to my heart, and I've seen celebrities do the red carpet, have photos taken, and then when it comes to the dinner and the awards, they don't even show up. They've got their press and they're gone. Now, no one's ever going to exploit these individuals because no one likes the controversy. And to be honest with you, I'd much rather focus my attention on the positive than the negative. Sure. But there does come a point where you just get a little bit frustrated. You know, I'm a huge advocate for mental health. Now, you can never discredit someone's attempt to raise awareness, but sometimes you can be a little bit savvy to who genuinely cares about the individual. And for me, it's when you roll your sleeves up. If you're going to do it when there's a camera in front of your face, does it count? I mean, I can't discredit, like I said, mm-hmm. I can't discredit someone. I'm sure their incentives may be genuine, but for me, it's the person that really gets up off their ass and actually really does something mm-hmm. about it and is consistent with it. Don't just do a one-off campaign where the Daily Mail is going to jump on board. Let's see it regularly.
But do you think there's, that's an interesting point that you raise, because I think there's kind of flavors of the month with any kind of charity, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, look, as someone who has been beating a drum about this for, you know, a couple of decades now, I was delighted to see that we're talking about mental health more and we're doing it in a, you know, in a more open way. However, I have to say, there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, if everyone's talking about it all at the same time and not understanding, you know, because it's the language, right? So when people say, oh, I'm depressed or anxious, feeling low is not just quantitatively different to being depressed, it's qualitatively different to being depressed. Someone that's been in the depths of depression knows that, you know, it's that feeling of hopelessness and helplessness. It's a feeling of, you know, there being no difference between climbing a mountain and taking a shower. That's how difficult it feels. It feels, you know, so isolating. Now, we all have down days, and I kind of worry that we've turned perhaps it into something that's just like, well, you know, something everyone experiences. And of course, it's great that we speak now about everyone experiencing down days and the things that you can do. But I don't think we should miss out the fact that, you know, there's a real difference to that kind of incapacitating anxiety, that incapacitating depression. So I take your point about walking the walk and talking the talk. And it's not about jumping on a bandwagon and saying, yeah, me too. But it's more about a kind of, I guess, those nuanced discussions of what it is.
I think it's, do you know what it for me is? It's being sensitive to individuals, because you have to understand everyone's blueprint is different. And for some people, they like to be shouted at. Some, they like just a simple conversation. Rather than trying to single an individual out, what I wanted to try and do is create a platform with the individuals that I film within Limitless to actually say, do you know what? It doesn't matter what walk of life you come from. you know, social, physical, mental, any form of ability, to be able to feature these individuals who are facing their own adversities, but they're doing it with a smile on their face. And you know, their meaning is actually, right, okay, I live with anorexia, or I live with depression, or I live with dystonia, or I live with a brain tumor. Rather than focusing on the negatives and allowing it to consume them and affect not only themselves, but their families, they're just taking it by the horns and they're doing the most remarkable things. And I think what's really interesting about the individuals that I film with is every single time when I ask them the question, if you could go back in time and be the person you were before this happened, would you? Every single time they turn around and say, no, this is me. I wouldn't change it for a second. I wouldn't have achieved the things I have up to this day had that not happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Tanzi, my friend who I filmed Berlin the documentary with, he's lost the use of his legs and he thinks it's the best thing that's ever happened to him. Because the person he is now, how grateful he is for life, that he's still alive. I think his children have learned more about life in the last year to 2 years since the accident than they ever would have before. And I think, you know, you look at his children, Jude and Fern, just the sensitivity and awareness they have now for other children with disabilities that they never would have had before, I think is remarkable. So for me, it's just altering your mentality that you've got to find a positive in anything that you go through. Because don't get me wrong, you know, if you had a choice, like if you were to be born in a different way, I'm sure you'd go, you know, it's a little bit easier not to have depression. But at the same time, had I not had depression and lived with mental illness, would I be sat here doing this podcast right now? Would I have done a marathon in Berlin? Would I be doing 34 marathons in 19 days? Absolutely not. Would I have created Limitless? Absolutely not. So actually, you've got to be grateful in a really strange way that in some respects you've been gifted it.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that you raise a really important point. Look, I'm kind of in this really... I love my job. I think it's a privilege to sit across from someone and to hear their story and to be able to at least in some small way help. And one of the things I've learned over the many years working clinically in my research is that people that are good at life are adaptable. And I think that's what you're talking about, adaptability. I think when people hear positivity, they're like, oh, well, you're, you know, rose-colored glasses. That's not what the research shows at all. What it shows is it's a yes, but, right? It's this, you know, one of my heroes of all time was Muhammad Ali. I'm a boxing fan. And you kind of see his progression, right? From this guy that was not just agile on his feet, but agile in his words. And that agility, even when his power speech was taken away, still came. He still had it. You know, the way that he was able to give us all that sense of, you know, he's still there, regardless of the Parkinson's, regardless of anything else. And I think, like you speak about your friend Ben, right? He focused on what he was, not what he wasn't, what he had, or what he'd had more of now, rather than what he lost. And I think that, to me, is one of the things that makes people good at life, just being able to roll with it and to yeah. reframe.
And I think what we need to educate people with is actually the power of your body and your mind. I think the problem is that we've made things too accessible, and I'm talking like prescribed medication. You know, now to certain individuals it is a necessity, because I think, you know, the extremities of what they're going through, but it's a lot harder. There's a lot more time that goes into it. Financially, it could be more expensive. But if we were to educate children, you know, the first 7 years of their life, if you were to really get into their head how powerful their mind and body is, that literally any organ in that body can rejuvenate itself. You know, I watched a really interesting documentary, Heal, and they did a test. They gave 100 people a prescribed drug and they gave 100 people a placebo. The placebo had a more positive effect on that 100 than the drug did itself.
Sure, but it depends obviously on the drug, because there's some very important drugs.
Of course, but we're not talking like, exactly. We're talking like basic medication, but it just shows you that actually the mind managed to create the chemical that was needed in order to have the benefit, right? So why we don't explore that more, I guess this is where politics comes in with pharmaceuticals, you know, like do they really want people to know how powerful the mind is? Because in this documentary, you know, there are individuals with like the worst forms of cancer who have beaten it and not had chemotherapy. There are individuals that are put into a wheelchair from a motorbike accident who haven't had operations and they're walking again.
Sure, sure. Just to kind of balance that out, though, these are the outliers, right? So we know that chemotherapy works with more people than it doesn't. We know
that. Of course.
And I guess to kind of just to push back on that a little bit, my worry is as well that I absolutely, I mean, my PhD was in psychoneuroimmunology, right? The way the mind and the body interact. So I know that there's certainly, there's a power of that. However, I think in the wrong hands, there's a lot of charlatanism as well, right?
Of course.
So I think, you know, one of my big pet peeves is like, oh, you know what, if you just want it bad enough and if you just believe in yourself,
you know,
these are great for cat posters. They're not great for, you know, it's not great for real life. And it's what came back to what you said before.
You've got to be the right person.
It's got to be an ongoing thing. It needs to be kind of a holistic approach. You need to kind of, there's absolutely a praise for, like, you know, both the Western and the Eastern medicine. You know, so I think, and I think that's one of my big worries these days, again, with the online world, right? So me and all my friends that are kind of in the medical world, you know, it used to be that you'd sit across from someone and have a discussion about what's going on. Now people, and I think it's great that they're coming in informed, but sometimes they're coming in informed from the wrong places as well about self-care. But one of the things I wanted to touch on a little more, you mentioned Limitless there. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you conceived the idea and how you choose your cases?
Yeah, so, you know, several years ago, I almost, you know, I basically, I was at a point of suicide. My depression got so bad. And, you know, I, still to this day, I'm so grateful for whatever reason I didn't. Because I think when you go through such a dark point in your life, you and anyone that's been through it will understand, like, the extent. And if you don't, if you haven't been through it, then, you know, it is really hard to understand. And I don't mean that to be patronizing. I think, you know, you can never really relate to something 100% unless you've been through it. But when you go through those dark moments, there's nothing there. You are just absolute darkness. You can't be of benefit to anyone. There's no purpose to you, and there probably never will be. And I think it was the best thing that ever happened to me that it didn't, because I look at the life that I've lived now, you know, the fact that I'm a father to the most beautiful little girl. You know, what an idiot would I have been had I made that decision, because I would have missed out on so many beautiful things. So Limitless came about because I was just thinking to myself, you know, I wish there was someone that I could watch or listen to that had been through something, but I saw the positives. Okay, this is what you're living with, but this is what can come off the back of it if you really want it to. So Limitless came about, which I wanted to showcase that there are literally no limits to what humanity is capable of. And we did the first series. I went to a sports brand, and it was just myself and an 18-year-old lad who decided not to do university, Ted Learney from Brighton. And we would drive all around the country meeting people. You know, we dealt with Josh Landman, who had jumped into a swimming pool and broke his neck. He's now paralyzed. I think he did his T4. Don't quote me on that, Josh. Sorry. But, you know, he's now doing Paralympic skiing and cycling, in his wheelchair. He's just doing the most remarkable things. And then we had another guy who had dystonia. It took him 4 years to diagnose his condition. I mean, he was a semi-pro rugby player. He went to bed, and when he woke up the next day, he literally couldn't walk, speak, and the mobility of his hands had completely gone. And he was written off. I mean, people were telling his girlfriend to leave him. You know, family wouldn't really accept his condition. And he kind of took the bull by the horns. And I mean, this is a guy who couldn't walk, and he's now a qualified personal trainer. He's done fitness modeling, and he's now training clients who have got Parkinson's, autism, cancer, depression, and all of their symptoms are improving off the back of his training methods. And I think it's because he's gone so deep into his mind. He understands the values that you need, and he can connect with these men and women in a way that I think a lot of people probably wouldn't be able to. You know, this series we featured a most amazing girl, Victoria, who is recovering from anorexia. I mean, she literally 4 years ago was in her father's arms, dying, and she's incredible. She's just been signed by Under Armour, and I'm so happy that a sports brand are now focusing on athletes with stories and substance, because she is an inspiration, and she's going to do the most unbelievable things.
And women that are athletes that look like athletes, as opposed to women that don't have, like, an ounce of muscle on.
There's purpose to the physique.
Indeed.
This is what I try and say to people, is rather than trying to look good, try and serve a purpose. Have your body actually serve a purpose for something. Have a goal in your mind. Like, people always say to me, you know, what's your training for? I train to be able to basically be in a wheelchair for up to 8 hours a day. you know, my body isn't, I haven't got a ripping six pack like I used to, but I'm so much happier for it because I know that my body can achieve something great.
But this is the thing, we consistently see our bodies as aesthetic and minimize their functionality. You know, the whole point of legs is they help you run and jump, not that they just look great in skirts. It's great that they look, but it's, yeah. That shouldn't be the, you know what, you said so much that I want to pick up and unpack. I guess one of the first things that really struck me, I think will really strike a chord with our listeners, is when you describe your own struggle and that those really dark moments, what pulled you back, Josh? Like, what was the thing, if you could go back to that moment, if it's not too hard, what was it that didn't make you kind of make sort of the worst possible decision?
I don't know. This is something that I would love to sit in a room of people that have been in that moment and find out what the definitive thought or moment that pulled them back. I mean, I don't know. It still fascinates me. I mean, I don't necessarily believe in God, but I believe that there is something up there that is watching over us. And I think whether it was something spiritual or whether it was just me, maybe my subconscious just went, "You're being an idiot. Don't do this." You know, I look at the things that I'm achieving now and the people that I'm working with, and I do feel like there's a big purpose for me on this planet. And I think you have to remind yourself of that. There's a difference between being arrogant and going, "I'm amazing," and turning around going, "I have a purpose on this planet." And I think too often people might go, "Well, it was to be a banker or a doctor or an athlete." Your purpose could literally be that you have lived with depression for 25 years and you're still living and even becoming a parent off the back of being, you know, living with depression is the most incredible thing.
So was there something then about precisely that, about finding a value in where you were or finding, like projecting forward to where you could be? Is it in that moment, was there a sense of, "I may be feeling this now, but this is like a permanent solution to a temporary problem"? Is there an ability to see it as a temporary problem or in that moment?
Yeah, I think so. And God, do you know what, again, whether it's God or a spiritual, I've always been looked after. Like, opportunities have always been given to me. They've always come around the corner in the most bizarre ways. You know, this was a really dark point in my life. And, you know, like a day later, I get a message on Facebook from Made in Chelsea to say, "We would love you to come in for an interview." And all I wanted to do was get out of Norfolk. Now, just moments like that are crazy. And I had to lie about my condition at the time, because obviously if I'd expressed to them what was really going on, they definitely wouldn't have hired me. But thank God they did. Mm-hmm. Because it changed my life forever. So as much as people discredit reality TV, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of idiots out there, but there are some really intelligent individuals mm-hmm. that are utilizing this platform to do the most remarkable things. You know, and as much as people will judge me and snub their nose at me for being on a reality show, you know, I could argue that I'm probably doing far more than what they probably are. And I don't mean that as in like a cock off, but that as in like, you know, I'm grateful for it because it's given me a platform and a network to connect with people, with myself, to other people, and to try and educate people with the sort of the challenges that I've faced and how I've overcome them. You know, social media, as much as people criticize it, it has its flaws, but it enables me a platform to speak to a lot of people in the way that I want to. You know, it might not be to the liking of a lot of the audience, but like I said, it's the ones that are listening. Even if it's one, if it's one out of 100,000, it's the ripple effect. You know, they may have end up having children, two or three, the effect it's going to have on them and their children and the children after them. That's what you really want to be remembered for.
Speaking of children, tell me about fatherhood. So yeah. India was born, she's a year and a half now?
How old is she? Year and a half, yeah.
Oh, how sweet.
I know. It's, you know, it's, she is taught, it, what's amazing about being a parent is that they teach you so much and yet she can't even speak. And that's what's interesting. You know, she taught me not to be selfish. Not that I was, but I think with my condition, sometimes you have to be very focused on what you're doing to keep the stability, right? But with her, it's man managing your time and the fact that she becomes the priority.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing about being a parent is, you know, everything that you hear, all these cliches, like you've never felt love. Like, I can honestly say that you've never felt love until you've had a child. Like,
you just... Do you know what? I have a friend who's a writer. And when I was pregnant and I was like, so she'd had kids. I'm like, what's it like? She put it in a way that I think captures it perfectly. She goes, well, basically, it's like taking out your heart, putting arms and legs on it and letting it run around. And I'm like, that is spot on. Because I always thought I was really good at loving. I really do. I think I'm a really loving person. But when I had Jesse, I was like, oh, it's like overwhelming.
Right? Yeah, it's crazy. And it's, do you know what? It's like... Sometimes they don't give much. And then I think that's why you value these key moments. Like, there was a moment the other day, Binks and I were in the country, and like Indy was just, you could tell she's so happy, you know, because I think mum and dad are together, even though we're not together. I think she's very aware that when the family's together and she's in the country where we're both from, she's just in her element. She was running around naked and like playing with her toys. And then I watched her. She was at the other end of the room. She just had this moment, like she was thinking. And she just walked over to me and she just kissed me on the lips and gave me a cuddle. And then she just carried on. And she rarely does it. She's gone from being the most affectionate thing in the world to just not giving kisses at all.
Giving my face back. She's like a toddler slash teenager.
And then there's moments where, I think this was when she was very young. We were in a room and some strangers came up to us and she was very nervous and shy. And this was the first time she had been. And I remember her grabbing me so tightly and she put her head into my neck. And in that moment, I was like, wow, that's the most powerful feeling in the world, that she really does connect with me and knows that I'm her protector.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that you do now, it serves a great, well, for me, it serves a greater purpose now. You know, the one thing I say to a lot of people, which I'm trying to do it softly, is that when you become a parent, you will still have mental illness, right? Not in all cases, but I think, you know, like for me, I still have it. Mm-hmm. I live with it every day. Mm-hmm. And my biggest fear is that I don't want it to affect my child. But at the same time, if I look at the positive and go, do you know what? I've lived with this for most of my life. If, God forbid, India ever did get any form of mental illness, at least she has a father that understands it.
I'm really glad you raised that, because I think as soon as you become a parent, your first thing is, oh, how on earth am I going to do this? I'm thinking, how am I going to keep this little thing alive? How am I going to? And I think when you have mental illness, or in fact any illness, it's immediate. How am I going to cope? So I'm delighted that you bring that up, and I genuinely do think that your self awareness and your awareness of it will be such an asset to India.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I think people, and I was worried about this being in the media eye, that I think a lot of parents are worried to admit that they are going through something. And I think it's because a lot of people they fear will judge and go, well, you're not stable to be a parent. You know, now again, if you're talking like the most extreme cases, then of course there's this element where maybe there are other precautions that need to be taken. But like, if you look at the majority of people that are living with any form of mental illness, they're very stable people, but unfortunately there are just those negative thoughts that just need to be kept at bay. And I think the quicker you identify with it and you realize which elements stabilize you, the better parent you're going to be. And I think it's such a wonderful thing that you're so in tune with your mindset that you can understand when something's not quite right. Mm-hmm. For me, fitness has always been the predominant thing that stabilizes me. And you know, when I was with Binks, she was so understanding of that. You know, and I think this is why I do these challenges. There is something inside me that, you know, and I say this, it's quite an extreme way of putting it, but there is a darkness inside me that wants to consume me every day. Now, it's never going to affect my family or friends. You know, it's just a battle that I have, and I have to do these challenges, and I have to commit to these individual stories, because this is what keeps me happy, this is what stabilizes me, and this is the reminder each day of what my purpose is.
But this to me is I think such a, you know, it's a simple but profound message. You know, we know enough about depression now and anxiety to know that there's certain things that will benefit all of us, regardless of what our starting point is. Yeah. So, you know, certainly some of us will need therapy and psychopharmacological help, but for all of us, exercise, for all of us, support systems, for all of us, you know, having the family to or the friends to talk about it and not hiding, because you know what's the underside of a secret? It's shame. And to me, that's been one of the biggest problems working in this area for years, that there's no other illness out there, or very few, shall we say, where there's shame involved. You know, you don't feel ashamed of having cancer necessarily, you don't feel ashamed of having broken your leg, you don't feel, but with mental illness, because you know, for far too long, it's been this secret. Of course, that's going to be the underside. And I think one of the best things that has come out in the last years is people kind of going, this is it. It's not my fault. It, you know, it's not a testament to me being a better or worse person. It just is what it is, like any yeah. other illness.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, it's something that is going to get, I think, worse over time, because I think the lifestyles that we live, and I think the biggest frustration for me is the fact that we understand it. We know that there's an issue, but we're not doing a great deal about it. Yeah. You know, we are starting to raise awareness, which is great. You know, I think the royal family coming on board is monumental. It's had such a wonderful Amazing. Impact. It really has, because Amazing. I think the issue is raising awareness. There are two types of people. There's an individual that I think people will listen to and engage with, and there's an individual that has the right intentions, but they're not necessarily the right person to raise the awareness where people don't engage. Now, again, I know that might sound quite harsh, but I think that's unfortunately just the reality that just certain voices are heard better than others. If you go back to school, there's always the popular kid, right?
Yeah.
Not always saying that they're necessarily the best person for the job, but if they say we're going to go and play, they're going to get the masses following them, you know, whereas somebody else might suggest it, maybe one. And I think it just, you know, I feel like our childhood instincts just remain within us throughout life. So it's just trying to pick, I'm not saying you have to be a royal member to have your voice heard, but the difference in the awareness from three individuals speaking about it, you know, a few years ago, to what it is now is huge.
Because it's also what, you know, I think far too many times we conflate mental illness with having a terrible life and not having success and not having admiration. And what they were able to say is, you know, mental illness doesn't look at how old you are, how much money you have, what your position is. It doesn't work like that. You know, it does not discriminate at all.
Yeah.
And I think that was the big thing. So, you know, taking away that taboo of having to keep up appearances. And I think we've kind of come full circle, right? Sort of, you know, as you said, right from the beginning, you know, when we were speaking, this idea of just portraying this perfect image, that has to stop. I mean, it is...
But unfortunately, it's not going to.
Well, you say that. But I have this theory. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but I caught my daughter, I mean, she's not big, she has a bit of social media, but with her friends today, just sending the god-awfulest sort of pictures to each other. It was like this anti-selfie. And I thought, you know, I started speaking about this to a friend out in the States, and there's a guy actually now doing a documentary on the anti-selfie. And I think slowly but surely, I think the more aware we become of the BS, because we know it's BS. You don't speak to anybody that thinks that looks like their own selfie. You know, you don't speak to anyone. We know that actually perfection is something that's caught in a moment. It's like happiness, Josh. It's not something that you reach and you're like, right, I'm happy now. It's something that you capture in a moment and you move on. And I do feel, like you said earlier, maybe that, you know, this conversation that you and I are having, you know, won't hit the millions and millions, but it'll hit enough people that matter, that care, that'll keep talking about it. And I just think we have more scope to talk about these things now and hold up a mirror to them. And I think that's what you're doing. And I think as long as more people in Europe, because I think what you're doing really matters as well, because you could have been the poster boy. Very easily. You were the poster boy. And then you decided that, you know what? They're not mutually exclusive. I can still be really, you know, young and handsome and aspirational, but also say I'm not perfect. And I think that example, even though it's not the masses doing it, I think we can infect people.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've learned from an amazing woman in my life, she was basically saying to me that you waste too much energy focusing on the negative. Focus on the positive in terms of people. So for me, rather than being that person who sits and has a conversation and goes, oh God, isn't social media terrible? Like, this person irritates me, this profile irritates me. Create a profile that you want people to see.
There you go.
So this is why I created Limitless. Instead of just being frustrated by what I'm seeing, create a platform and don't go to someone, you have to watch this, why are you watching that? If one day that person decides that they no longer wish to watch that profile and they flick onto your channel and they want to watch that, it's an amazing thing. And I think you have to allow people to organically make the decision for themselves, because I think the minute you tell someone to do something,
Well, it's like health campaigns. Yeah. You can sit there till the cows come home and tell people like not to smoke, but it's not until they themselves find a reason, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, before we end, I want you to think about and sort of the three things I always ask people to think about, just in terms of their own journey. And one is a moment, one is a comfort, and one is a challenge. The moment is kind of that seminal moment in your life. I think I can probably guess a couple of those that might be for you that kind of changed your trajectory. A comfort is what helps you in those dark moments. And then a challenge, well, it's what you're doing next to kind of orientate yourself. So can we talk about these things just briefly?
Yeah, so a moment in time, I would say, there's two in recent times that have stood out for me. One would be, do you know, as much as Berlin was really, really important for me, but I think the first major challenge I set myself was the Bear Grylls survival race. Mm-hmm. It was with the Royal Marines. And that was the beginning of a journey of me focusing my body in a constructive way on these challenges. So for that, I'm grateful because it's led me to this point of now doing John O'Groats to Land's End. I think my daughter as well.
Yeah.
is so key because I, like I said to you, even though she's only 1.5 and doesn't speak a single sense or word of common sense, you know, she in fact she can't speak at all. You know, I've learned so much from her. And then what was these?
So that's your comfort.
That's it. That's yeah.
And then the challenge. Where do you go from here?
Well, yeah, the challenge is John O'Groats to Land's End. You know,
amazing.
You know, the fact that you can do a challenge but serve such a greater purpose. You know, for me, I don't want people to see wheelchairs as an alien, and I would love to think that one day I can have able-bodied people in a wheelchair showing support and being invested in something yeah. that is incredible, and hopefully people not having the mentality of, you know, I don't know, I've heard certain individuals saying that, you know, by being in a chair it could be disrespectful or easier, and I think it's only when you're sat in that chair when, you know, it really grounds you and you realize the importance of it. It, you know, it would be amazing. I'd love to do a marathon one day with, you know, 5 to 10 able-bodied people in a chair. I think that could be a really special moment.
Wow, amazing. Josh, it's been such a great talk. Thank you so much for coming in to speak to me. Just before we end, where can people find out more about you? Because I'm sure our listeners will want to hear a lot more.
So Instagram is Joshua_JP. And then YouTube would just be Joshua Patterson Limitless. So we're currently dropping our second series, which is amazing. We've got an episode on a brain tumor coming out, two individuals on brain tumors, a girl with narcolepsy. And then we are filming with Alistair Brownlee, the triathlete, which is going to be incredible. So I think we're going to have a really cool insight into this guy's life.
I can't wait to watch it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Amazing.
Oh, I loved speaking to Josh. Again, I always kind of feel on this podcast, it's great for me to speak to you as someone who's worked in this field of mental health for years. But when I have someone on who's able to articulate as well as Josh was his own experience, I think that can be profoundly impactful. And if you are out there and you are experiencing some of the things that Josh spoke about today, then I just need you to know that there is help, that, you know, that we have a much bigger understanding, a much greater ability to help than we ever could before. So make sure you reach out for that support and take good care of you. Until we meet again, I wish you a very healthy and happy body and mind.